Reading FC showed just how much work Jose Gomez has on his plate with a 4-1 home defeat to Swansea on Tuesday, with just about 100 seconds of football played in 2019 before the Royals conceded their first goal. It is a different year, but the same crap, I'm afraid. Speaking of which, welcome to the Tireless Den podcast, episode 179, with your host Mark Mayo, joining you for a new calendar year of football. And doing that with me this evening is Simeon Pickup, aka Bucks Royal, editor of thetirelessden.com. How's it going, mate?
Well, I'm a thoroughly depressed Simeon Pickup, editor of thetirelessden.com at the moment. That was a dire way to start a year. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it in terms of the sheer amount of optimism and joy going into it, and then just being completely dashed come, well, I was about to say 5 p.m, but to be honest, just a few minutes into the game.
Yeah, there's actually just a quite ironic screenshot at the moment. If you go onto the Reading FC official Twitter, at 3 p.m. they tweeted, "New year, new start, new era." And immediately there has a tweet, "Goal to Swansea." So it's maybe not so much of a new era, but we certainly need a new start. So yeah, we'll be reviewing that and a little bit around at the Xmas period as well, and all the rest, usual gubbins as well, news, bites, mailbag, and previewing a trip to a small club in the northwest as well. So let's get into that with the Xmas period recap.
The Tilehurst End podcast.
Read the blog
on thetilehurstend.com.
So let's start with some basic stats then. We're 5 points adrift of safety. We've had one win since October the 20th. We've scored 2 goals in 6 games. We've kept 1 clean sheet in 8. And we've got 1 away win for the entire season to this point. Oh, and it's Manchester United up next. Sim, let's start with the Swansea game, the most recent one then. And with all those stats in mind, I think the one particular thing that springs to mind out of this Swansea game is the clean sheet stat, because this was a defeat born out of shocking defending.
Yeah, absolutely dire defending, absolutely diabolical. Just so frustrating coming back off the back of a really good clean sheet and 0-0 draw at QPR just a few days ago. That's the kind of result that you looked at and thought had turned a corner for us. A while ago, we would have been beaten 1-0 there, or 2-0, 2-1, something like that, just edged out with some sloppy defending. But Reading finally managed to do themselves some justice with a decent 0-0 draw at QPR, and then just undid it, well, even within the first couple of minutes against Swansea. And it was just diabolical from there on in. A series of dire bits of defending throughout the first half, not so bad in the second half, when I think Swansea showed us a bit of mercy. But in the first half, it was just horrific. Any time that Swansea looked like wanting to score, Reading just let them.
Really summed up for me, it was by the I can't remember if it was the second or third goal. I think it was the second goal, when Mo Barrow has the opportunity to clear the ball in his own corner flag. And I mean, to be fair, some fans would have blamed him just for punting it out for a throw-in, but it's actually quite a common thing that you see a lot of defenders do, just getting the ball out of play and dealing with it in the next attack and the next movement. But he just lays it into a completely free Swansea man who's a nice little position to put a ball in, and then it must bobble through about 4 Swansea players before being bundled in at the far post. And it was crosses into the box that did for Reading in that first half. 3-0 down they were by the halftime whistle, and Jose Gomez said that Swansea didn't actually come out to win this game 4-1, but we allowed them, and that was the most frustrating thing. And the only solace, I think, so far that we've seen in this game as well, and particularly across the 3 games with the 0-0 draw against QPR and the 1-0 defeat against Millwall, is that there seems to be a semblance of a partnership forming in the centre of midfield with Rinomata and John Swift. It's clear that Gomez trusts Swift, and getting him playing could be key to any sort of revival that we're going to go through.
Yeah, can't argue with that. He's the kind of technical player that you want in the middle of the park, someone who can move the ball around, create some chances, and really just come up with the ideas that other people in the squad aren't capable of. I guess Liam Kelly's the only person kind of comparable to Swift in that kind of creative, deep-lying playmaker kind of role. But the thing about Swift is, for every one really good performance that he puts in against QPR, that kind of thing, he almost immediately follows up with a just a weak performance where he doesn't take any responsibility in the next game. He looked particularly frustrating, to be honest, against Swansea. He didn't take responsibility. He was shoved off the ball too easily a lot of the time. He came up with some good ideas at various points during the match. He almost lobbed the goalie in the first half for what would have been a spectacularly surprising goal in the first half, where it looked like he'd lobbed the goalie and it was just about to go over the line, but the goalie just managed to kind of claw it out for what was almost a goal but wasn't quite in the end. I think just going back to that thing about Barrow that you mentioned earlier, where he gave the ball away for one of the goals, it's things like that that for me really kind of really need to be mentioned about this side. Players are not necessarily stupid in a sense, but they do some stupid things at the at really bad times for us. Barrow kind of trying to pump the ball up the pitch, and rather than getting a particularly good clearance on it or being more decisive and just kicking the ball out of play, he gives it away to an opposition player who's able to get into a dangerous area and then eventually create the goal. And it's just that kind of frustrating, stupid bit of play that I really just get frustrated with. Omar Richards did it a few times as well, just giving the ball away and setting up Swansea for a counter-attack a few times. And it's naivety, it's stupidity again. And it's those kind of problems that really create issues for us. It's not always the opposition forcing errors and really pressing us and making us come into these really bad mistakes, but we just put ourselves into these problems.
And I think that's one of the key things about not only watching this team, but playing in it as well. It must be so demoralising. If you're, you know, Yaku Mese playing up front today, and he didn't have a great game by any guards. I don't think anyone did really. And he's kind of dropped off form a little bit, Mese, whether he's carrying an injury or whether it will turn out that he's maybe not got the right coach at the moment for him. That time will tell. But if you're there as an attacker and you watch your defenders or your midfield players do these stupid, silly errors that lead to goals, and suddenly you're 1-0 down, you're 2-0 down, you're 3-0 down, even 4-0 down today, that's so demoralising. It's so hard to pick up from that and go again, especially when you're Sonny Aluko, who's, you know, played through the middle under Gomez. Nothing special, not too bad by any regards. I see Gareth McCleary is obviously far from his best at the moment, but it's so hard to pick yourself up from those moments and go again, because if you're playing in this Reading team for any point in the last 18, 24 months, you've seen that happen time and time again, that's how we can see goals.
Exactly. It's a cycle that affects the entire side. And when you're an attacking player, you want to be in that mindset where you know that if you get a chance, you're able to, at the very least, put your side back level, or ideally put them into the lead or extend a lead. You want to think that whatever you do in your job in the final third, it's going to matter for something. It's actually going to help the team. But then when you look at the back, when you look at the defence making all these errors, going down 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, from Mate's point of view, he's going to wonder why he's bothering, chasing down all these long balls, really making movement up top, trying to look for passes. And the longer those kind of problems go on, the more the heads drop of the attacking players. They think, why do I bother making these runs? Why do I bother dribbling at the defence or playing a pass or something like that? It's an ongoing vicious cycle. And if you get errors in one part of the pitch, it affects the whole team. And that's something that Gomez really needs to address over the next couple of days, weeks and months, and really just batter home into these players' minds that if they're making these kind of errors, they really need to atone for it, and they really need to, well, just make sure it doesn't affect the entire performance. And I guess ideally, looking at the January transfer window, which is going to be huge for us, if we can bring in the kind of players that really stop heads from dropping, the kind of players who are not just leaders, but really set a positive example to others. So don't have to be really experienced players who lead from the front, but you want talismanic players, particularly in the final third, who are going to come up with ideas and really drive the rest of the team on and give them the belief that they can win.
Well, that January transfer window coming up is going to be absolutely huge, and I kind of want to preview that in next week's show once we start to get some movement in that, as we have a show after the Manchester United game. Let's finish this recap. Well, we'll finish it on a genuinely positive note, but before we get to that, let's just touch on the QPR 0-0 draw and the Millwall 1-0 defeat. What did we actually learn from those games in terms of Gomez and in terms of where we're at in the relegation battle? I thought with the Millwall game, it's a tough defeat to take, but we played most of it with 10 men and Gomez hadn't really got into the role at any point for that one. And the QPR game, I'd say, is more significant in terms of us understanding Gomez and his style. It was quite promising at the time coming away with it. From it, we probably thought we might have even nicked a win. Defence looks a bit flaky, but we kept possession really well, created some chances. But does that all get thrown to one side now because of the result that followed it?
I think if you look at the first two games of Gomez, it shows just how single-minded he is with his style of football, that he's come in and tried to bring in this possession brand very, very, I don't want to say extreme, it's a very strong kind of possession football. It's not just keeping the ball when you can, but really trying to dominate games through possession and creating chances through that. And the fact is that he's done that in his very first game at Millwall. He's done it at QPR as well. Didn't really work in Swansea at all, obviously. But I don't think he's the kind of guy who's going to throw that away just because of one really terrible dire day at the office against Swansea. He's going to try and make that system work rather than abandon the system. He's probably not going to use it too much up against Manchester United, where we are going to get absolutely cut to pieces if we try and play vast, expansive, attractive football up at Old Trafford against a really rejuvenated, confident Man United side. But going forwards in the league, it's a system that can potentially work if he gets his own tactics right, if he hopefully brings in a few players in the January transfer window and gets rid of a few who aren't really suited to the system.
Well, it does appear, we'll talk a bit more about this in the mailbag, but it does appear as if Jose Gomez is going to be, let's say, burning some bridges. That's probably a bit of a harsh term of putting it, because it sounds like he's going to be sitting down with some players that he doesn't want at the club in the next few days and telling those that aren't going to fit his style that they're going to be moving to a different team. And I think having a bit of a clear out isn't something that I'll be arguing against at this moment in time. And also, I kind of think that, as you were saying, a single-minded approach with possession-based football, just the words Yapstam burst into my head, but hopefully it won't be quite as unsuccessful as that turned out to be. But I'll certainly take the early success he had. Finishing then with the recap, Callum Harriott came off the bench, first time in God knows how long. It's 2 years plus almost, or maybe just under 2 years, since he last played. Awful time, hamstring injuries, kept popping up, almost cured one, and then the other one went, and it's just been an absolute nightmare. Came off the bench against Swansea and got that consolation goal, and it was a genuine moment of probably, I don't want to overemphasise it, but the sort of things that you want to have around the club are these players who have come from very dark days and really tough moments in their career with genuine talent and ability, offering something to the team and fighting for it and getting that reward, which just makes the club a better place to be around.
Exactly. We've got to take any positive moments we can, to be honest. Anything that can possibly drive on players or really make them think that brighter days are around the corner, they got to take the most of it. This is the kind of thing that Jose Gomez really has to kind of make the most out of. He's got to show the players that if someone like Callum Harriott, who's been out for, I think it's 2 years and 2 days since he last pulled on a Reading shirt in a first team game, if someone like him can come in and immediately play well, score a goal and by all means get a good reaction out of the crowd, then there's no reason why the other players shouldn't be able to do it. If they really get their head down, work hard and have the right attitude, then they can hopefully turn things around as well.
Yeah, hopefully it will serve as inspiration for the fans and players alike. And we'll be moving on then to News Bites, where we're going to catch up with the other teams of Reading Football Club and seeing what they're going to be up to in the first weeks of the new year.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So on to the News Bites, and Sim, if you'll bear with me while I discuss what has been going on in the other teams for Reading FC over the Christmas period. Of course, the under-23s, the under-18s and the women's teams all didn't play over Christmas. They had a well-earned break. So just to give you a sense of where everybody's at as they get back into action, the under-23s team are third in the Premier League 2 table. Man United and Wolves, the sort of teams they're battling with at the moment, did have a really good run up to the top of the table. But a couple defeats while Scott Marshall was taking charge of the first team puts them third at the moment. They host Norwich on Monday the 7th. Then on the 11th, they go to Wolves. The under-18s, they've had a really tough run of form. 10th in the Premier League top flight table at the moment. They go to Norwich on the 5th of January. Then they host Leicester on the 10th. And finally, the women's team, they go to Birmingham on the 6th in the Women's Super League. And then they play Chelsea on the 9th of January in the Conti Cup. They are 5th in the top flight table, the Women's Super League 1 at the moment. And it's just so nice, isn't it, to see the Reading team assured in their style and their personality and what they want to be, challenging, arguably above their sort of pay grade. And, you know, there's some real giants, and Chelsea, Man City and Arsenal, the teams that have dominated women's football in the last few years. So very comfortable in terms of any relegation fears. About 4 points off the top four at the moment, so plenty to aim for in the new year. And the women, as I say, have plenty on their plate and plenty to aim for with much ambition. And we'll be following them in due course as they get back in action. And now our attention switches back to perhaps the lesser of the current Reading teams, the men's team in the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
It's a bit hard with the mailbag then, I'll admit, Tim, when it comes to after these games. You want fans to vent their frustrations to you, and by fans for fans, this podcast is. We want to show that off. But where we direct that, I think, is quite difficult, because I did ask on the Twitter for the mailbag today, saying, what are your questions after watching a 4-1 defeat at home? Both Andrew Butcher and Adam Humphreys just said, why? Just why did it happen? What's gone wrong? And it really is. You could probably write a book on what's gone wrong in the past 18 months at Reading Football Club. Alex Everson asking, where's the pride from the players? It's just a mystery, really. The one thing I've mentioned when it comes to us saying where's the pride and why is this happening, you can take solace from examples that we need to follow. One of those is Hull at the moment, who beat Bolton 6-0 today after looking down and out. They're on 5 straight wins and comfortably mid-table, so it can be done. And discussing how it can be done, Andrew Smith says the club needs a root and branch wholesale change, with the exception of the academy players. There's a losing attitude inside the squad. I doubt O'Shea has won 2 games in a row for 6 years. Total clearance required, including cancelling contracts. Now, Sim, start thinking now about which players you think might be moved on, because Guy J asked us. Gomez said on BBC Berkshire that he'll be sitting down with some players about leaving the club, and some won't be happy. So who are they? Now, which names immediately spring to your mind when it comes to clear outs and the sort of players that Jose Gomez is going to sit down and say, listen, mate, I'm afraid whether you're leaving on a free or for a nominal fee or on loan or whatever, you're just not going to be sticking around at the club. Who do you think that's going to be?
Immediately you have to look at the players who are not particularly good value for money that we've typically brought in the last maybe year and a half or so, haven't been good value for money and aren't going to fit into this system. People like Dave Edwards, who was never a good fit for the Amsterdam style of football in the first place and won't be a good fit for this style of football either. Dave Myler fits into a similar category. I guess Sam Walker, Vito Minone as well. But for me, all those questions kind of tie together, really, particularly looking at bringing academy players through, and especially the issue of pride, because we don't have enough players at the moment who are really kind of, they really care about the club. I'm not saying that people who haven't been here for very long don't care about the club at all, but it really doesn't hit them emotionally when the club isn't doing well. they've not been here for a number of years, seen us go through good times and bad times, and really built up that emotional connection. You look at people like, say, Gorks, Karachan, Pierce, even Simon Church, who were here for a number of years and built up that affinity and that love for the club, really built up that affinity and connection with the fans as well. So if we did have a tough time, they knew how to bounce back, and they had the right mentality to bounce back. They had that pride in the club, that pride in the shirt, and were able to, they were in the right place mentally to recover, basically. And I look at people like Myler, McShane, O'Shea, Manone. I'm sure they're very nice guys. They've got the right attitude in a sense, but it's not the kind of attitude that's right for Reading at the moment. They don't have a proper connection with the club. They don't really know what it's like to be a Reading player and what it is to be a success at Reading, essentially. I like people like McCleary and Gunter because I do think they have the right attitude and know what it's like to be at Reading, essentially. It's hard to define what it is, really, that kind of connection between players and the club, but you get it quite obviously with some players, particularly that 11-12 side that was just so mentally resolute and was able to kind of will itself to a championship title. But you don't have it with this current crop at all. And if we're to turn that around, it's not something you can do in the short term. You can't just buy a player who understands Reading Football Club. It has to be something that really develops over the course of a couple of years, which is why the academy is so important. You look at Andy Rinnem-Hota and how well he's done in the last couple of weeks, coming in, being really, really determined, basically. Even on a bad day like today, he was, for me, my man of the match. He was energetic, determined, ran his socks off. And that's not the kind of performance that you get from other people. Some of the players that have come in the last couple of years, they're not going to really show up and really put in that extra level of effort, even when everyone else on the side isn't turning up.
One of the things that I saw actually is on New Year's Eve, Paul McShane on his Instagram made it very clear that he hadn't enjoyed 2018 and that he hoped 2019 was going to be better. I think one of the things that I've noticed with McShane in particular is, isn't he still the club captain? And when was the last time I saw the club really put him in any media, like saying Paul McShane, club captain, is fit again, or he's fighting his injuries, is an interview with him? He's not been brought to the front, if you know what I mean. And contrast that with Gareth McCleary, who was the captain for the last couple of games, and the club are really, you know, pushing how great it is that McCleary's captain, how much he's earned it, etc., which, I mean, I completely agree with the McCleary stuff, but the fact that you're not hearing from the likes of Paul McShane, you're certainly not hearing from you know, Myler and Edwards and that so much, is a pretty clear sign that I think those are the three that I think could be on their way. And Reading probably will be able to shift them because, you know, maybe they'll have to move them out on loans while paying a bit of the wages. But these are experienced players, and at least League One teams will be looking at someone like Paul McShane and David Myler and thinking that they can do a job. Tyler Blackett, interestingly, has been linked with a move to Wigan, although more of a sideways move I can't imagine at the moment. So that'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on. But yeah, I think it's good that Gomez is, in my opinion, it's good that he's coming out and saying that, you know, the squad's too big. Clement said it as well. It's just a plain fact that we all know at the moment, and which ones he moves out, maybe there'll be some surprises. Into the mailbag, the next question, Hordes asks, do you think the club faces administration if we are relegated? I can't see the arrogant incompetence of Gourlay, etc., inserting relegation clauses into these bumper contracts. The administration question, for me, it purely lies with the owners, and it really depends on, you know, whether they want to abandon a League One team. I'm not sure how able they are to do that. Whether they want to tighten the purse strings in certain ways, whether they, you know, want to spend big in League One to get out. It's really tough to answer. And I do think that the signs are that the owners have invested so far, and that they have pockets that can sustain, you know, a League One team at the end of the day. So I think, I don't know if you have any particular worries about that, Sim, but I must say that I'm relatively confident in it not being the case.
I'm just not sure, to be honest. there's not really much we can say about the finances behind the scenes without knowing too much in detail. I guess all I'd add is that we don't really have too many assets at the moment in terms of players, in terms of people that we can sell for a decent fee. Liam Moore is the best example of that, being worth, well, potentially being worth 10 million or so last summer, if you believe some of the rumours about the transfer fees that were apparently he was going to go for that Brighton move that never materialised.
I think Yaku Mate,
he's not going to fetch
someone
that.
Who could fetch a few million should we, you know, need it.
Maybe a million or two, but he scored, what, 7 goals this season, I think it is. And that's not the kind of the record that's going to bring a couple of million in for him. Otherwise, you're looking at young players who might be very talented, but at the moment aren't going to fetch a huge fee. Danny Loder's a very talented guy, but is he going to fetch more than, what, a million or two, maybe, at this moment, excluding sell-on fees and stuff like that? There's just not enough value in this squad, particularly in relation to the wages that we're probably handing out, the length of contracts. I imagine Sonny Aluko's on a decent amount, and he signed, what, a 4-year deal when he came in. Tyler Blackett was on a 4-year deal as well, and Louise, that's almost up in 2020. But generally speaking, we've got presumably quite expensive contracts that are going to run for quite a while. So that's going to be a real worry if you get down to League One. It's one thing saying you're going to rebalance the squad and get rid of some of these players, but let's say someone like Sonny Aluko is still on the books if we go down to League One. Who's going to want to take him?
One that we hopefully won't ever have to really consider, but you know, really, it is not looking good for where Reading are at the moment. Is a bit of an understatement and stating the obvious at the same point, but we I think Reading fans are very, very realistic in the sense that this team is fully involved in a relegation battle that they are not winning in any sense of the word at the moment. Just to move on for the end of the mailbag, then, we did ask on the Twitter, where does this rank in terms of Reading's worst home team performances? John and Neil Carby both talked about the Bristol Rovers game. Worse than almost everything else, including Burns, was Neil Carby said. I've actually got the old match report up from the Bristol Rovers game, and it said this was in it was a January game back in 1999, 6-0 to Bristol Rovers it finished, for anyone who's not aware of this travesty. Basically, it actually says that we were pathetic in every way, is one quote. I noticed that, strangely enough, the first half was quite promising, is another sort of interesting thing. And then it gets summed up here in this Hobnob Anyone old match report that's still floating around online, saying the second half, quite frankly, I'd rather not talk about it. It's probably a very good way of describing what happened on that afternoon against Bristol Rovers. Lewis Stagg and Jack Simpson both said it's the worst home performance they've ever seen. Andrew Smith said, I remember standing on the Elm Park pitch waiting to find out Newport had relegated us. I feel the same way today. Root and branch wholesale changes required. The players must be feeling bad as well. Sell, cancel contracts, anything, just change it. And James Spalding said, sad thing is, do we think this is rock bottom? And I don't know about you, Sim, but it's really hard to work that one out, isn't it? Because the teams that we're going to be coming up against, I mean, we go to Derby in a few weeks, obviously go to Man United next weekend. We could, if we play that badly again, and we defend that badly, or even worse, which is, you know, something we are capable of, against a better team, we could get, you know, I remember when we got beat 8-1 by Birmingham, and that sort of thing could happen again in the way this team is playing.
It's all about the reaction at the moment. It's all about how Jose Gomez sorts it out. I don't know how he's going to manage it, because there's not really too many obvious changes he can make to the first team at the moment. I know we've got a big squad, but there's a lot of injury problems throughout it. There's not many kind of obvious alterations you can make, even for the Man United game. It's rock bottom if we want it to be. If we really bounce back, if we really except that this can be rock bottom and that we're capable of playing a lot better and we take the right lessons from today, then we're more than capable of making this rock bottom, improving and scraping safety, or perhaps a little bit better than that. But if the players kind of wallow into self-pity and just feel bad about it and don't really react to this game properly, or if there's not really enough changes in the January transfer window and we're left with this same group, largely speaking, going into February, then we are going to be in a lot of trouble and we are going to see other games like this throughout the rest of the season. I think perhaps a silver lining to this cloud is that it's good to have this kind of game so early on in January, so early on in Jose Gomez's era at Reading, because he's able to react to it. He's able to say, right, this is how bad my players can be. I know what I'm up against. Because if this had happened, say, at the end of January, when we'd been on a bit of a decent run of form and we kind of thought we'd got past the worst of it, but then had this kind of day a little bit later when we weren't able to react to it properly, that would be a real problem.
It is the warts and all approach. And I remember a few years ago when Steve Clarke first came in, we went to Brighton and spaffed a two-goal lead there and drew 2-2 very late on. And I think it was about late December, I think it was, definitely Christmas period, that happened. And it was the warts and all approach, which I was happy about at the time. And I suppose you can say, arguably, that it kind of worked in that sense with Steve Clarke. And you just have to hope that Jose Gomez, I think he knows what he wants, and I think he knows what to communicate to his players to bring it out. But whether they react to it, whether he's the right man to bring them round, is just something that we're going to have to hope on. And that's what makes Jose Gomez the most important person at Reading Football Club at the moment. And he is going to be the man taking us to Old Trafford for the FA Cup third round game on Saturday afternoon, 12:30 kickoff on the telly. And we'll be talking about that next in Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Just the 12 goals for Man United since Ole Gunnar Solskjaer took over, this being before they went to Newcastle, which is tomorrow evening as we record this. So the first thing that, and probably the main thing that I want to know about this, Sim, is will Man United take this seriously? To which the only thing I can say to that is yes, they definitely will, because this is Solskjaer's only chance, or only real chance, should I say, at a trophy in this supposedly short spell he's going to have at Man United. And therefore, he's going to play, I think, a relatively strong team. Maybe not fully strong, but I think he's going to be really intent on taking United far in the Cup, because he knows that they're all about trophies, and this is his best chance at a trophy by some distance.
That's true, but he'll also know that he needs to kind of make a few changes, bring in a few young players where he can, because obviously that's something that Jose Mourinho got into a lot of trouble for, not taking Man United's academy seriously enough, not giving enough chances to young players. So Solskjaer is going to try and do that where he can, I think. And there's not really going to be a better opportunity for him to blood a couple of academy players and give them some game time than at home in the FA Cup to little old Reading. I think Mason Greenwood is one name that's been mentioned as a talented guy who might get a run out against us. I imagine there could be a couple in the first team, maybe as many as three or four, but either way, there will certainly be enough quality to overwhelm us, particularly if someone like Paul Pogba starts, Marcus Rashford as well, who are both in some decent form at the moment. And if they do turn up, then, well, it's going to be a long afternoon, and I'm just delighted that I don't have my match ticket for it.
Man United have done the usual very, very helpful thing of charging a stupidly high amount of money for a ticket, which meant that little old Reading in the Championship relegation battle have had to subsidise a certain amount, a percentage of the match ticket to make it somewhat affordable for Reading. So, I mean, it's just one of those, it's just a fact that's kind of depressing for me, because I know no matter what, the justice of that won't be served for those fans going up there, or the chance of being served. It's low, let's put it that way. And instead of pontificating on how Reading are going to get a replay or any kind of result at Old Trafford, what team changes would you make to freshen up the side, to bring in, you know, would you bring in Danny Loader and play maybe Osho? Do you go with youth, or do you think you maybe go a bit more with the experience that you have, like Bodvar, and make sure Liam Moore's in there. John O'Shea can maybe step into midfield if we're going to play that. Which sort of way would you go with the team?
There's a couple of slightly more experienced players who've been on the bench recently, haven't played quite as much. Liam Moore didn't start today. John Daly Bodvarsson didn't start today. And I just think it's set up for one of them to, or both of them, and maybe a few other players to come into the side and start on Saturday. And it's that kind of experience we're going to need if we're to get anything at all from that game. I just think that if you play people like Loader and Osho, then you're in with a bit of a problem of them potentially having their confidence completely destroyed by getting battered up at Old Trafford. It's not going to be very good for Gabriel Osho's confidence and development if he is in a side that ships 4, 5, 6 goals to Marcus Rashford and Paul Pogba and company. I just think that if you're going to, putting it bluntly, subject anyone to that, it's better to get the more experienced players in the side that experiences that.
Yeah, it'll be a tough one. I think we'll have to do better than we did, I think, a couple of years ago when Yap Stam took a Reading team to Old Trafford. I think we were 2-0 down within 5 minutes, and just get through, take the game in stages and get through little bits, because I expect Man United will go to Newcastle, and even if they get beat, they'll be coming back to Old Trafford. They can, here we go, Fortress Old Trafford, and they'll be absolutely confident in their abilities to stroll past the Reading team that are currently very unconfident in their abilities. And Jose Gomez said after the Swansea game that he wants players to play with no pressure at all. So hopefully, you know, we won't, at the very least, we'll make a proud stand in our somewhat inevitable exit from the third round of the FA Cup. Before we go then, Prediction League, how it's been going over Christmas is that no one's actually nailed a result over Christmas. Ollie Allen, one of those who got the draw against QPR, means he's nudged to within a point of Dan Wimbush. So Wim's on 23 points, Ollie on 22, then Handbags on 20, falling closely behind. So the Man United game isn't part of the Prediction League, Sim. But nonetheless, I would like a score prediction from you. And where do you think this one's going to go?
I'm going to be optimistic and say 5-0 Man United.
Just the 5 in that case. I think I'll probably go 4-1. I think United, they'll get an early one, and then they'll probably, you know, knock it around a bit, and then second half they'll get back into their momentum and finish us off with a few incisive goals, and maybe we'll get a late penalty or something, and Mark McNulty will score a 90th minute penalty in the most irrelevant of circumstances, and now that the pressure is off, that's my prediction. So in that case, we will draw to a close this episode of the Tiresome Podcast. Thank you for listening, and thank you for joining us in the new year. Hopefully it won't be as bad as the last one, although, you know, we thought 2018 was bad. Here we are, and Sim, thank you as always for joining me to talk Reading FC this evening.
Thanks for having me.
And we will be back after the Man United game. Ollie will be back in a couple of days to preview that. Then I'll be back on maybe Monday or Tuesday the week after to talk about one of Reading's most famous days. Yes, you know, the day they only conceded 6 at Old Trafford when it probably should have been 12. Come on, you arse. You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it's